You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody, it's James. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. Today, my guest host is not Mr. Luke LaCoy. It is my other best friend, Mr. David Studebaker.
Hey, yo, back on the CCP.
Nice. Welcome back. And I see you have your book in the background, Lone Star Lance.
Yes. Yeah, Lone Star Lance, the comedy mystery novel of the century. It's James Creviston approved. It's got 5 stars on Amazon.
That's amazing.
And all the proceeds go directly to my son's diapers. So yes. Please, you know what? Money back guarantee. If you buy the book and you don't like it, hit me up. I'll Venmo you. I'll Venmo you the amount.
Go ahead.
I'm the men's warehouse of literature. You're going to like the way you read. I guarantee it.
If you don't like it, you Venmo his address and I'm going to come to you and make you like it.
Yeah, right.
It's a good book.
Yeah. I'll Venmo you the money. Yeah, I'll Venmo you the money. And then James will come and beat you up for making me Venmo you the money.
You guys will love it. I promise you. It's a great book. I'm waiting for book two. So please buy it. Please support him so then he can make the second book. But today it's Welcome Back Comedy because the world is opening up. At least California is opening back up and places are doing comedy in person. I've been everywhere without a mask. It's been great. I just go into stores that I don't even want to be in the store. I just go in there because I know I don't have to wear a mask in there now. So I just go in the store. I'm like, hey, I don't have to wear a mask. And I run out and go to another store. They hate me.
I know. I don't know because I'm still masking like at the grocery store because to me, like if the employees still have to wear the mask, just out of solidarity for them having to wear it, I'm going in. But then I see people without it. I'm like, maybe I should just let it ride. I am excited that Disneyland is no mask anymore. That's what I'm – although for kids ages 2 to 13, they still have to wear masks. Like they're enforcing it there.
But I thought you could – I thought kids – yeah, but I thought kids could suffocate if they have to wear a mask like at a certain –
no, degree. Well, no. That Disneyland is 2 to 13. So I'm waiting until – because I'm not going to – Matthew, there's no way he's going to wear a mask.
Yeah,
and he's big enough now that like I can't get away with like, well, he's just a baby because he's a tank. So, so I'm giving it a little bit of time, but I'm excited, baby.
I'll have a funny story for you. So it was the week before the mask mandate went away, a friend of ours came and said, I just was in this store and they don't have a sign and they don't make you wear a mask. So I like roll through that store, no mask. I'm like, this is awesome. So then, as we're leaving, I hear someone in the parking lot say, yeah, I was in Trader Joe's. You don't have to wear a mask. I roll to Trader Joe's, right? And I go through there. I realize my wife comes back like 2 days later. She's like, I went into Trader Joe's and I didn't have a mask on and they said something to me. She's like, I think you just went rogue that day. And I was like, well, nobody called me out. I didn't know, if somebody wanted me to wear a mask in the store, I would totally do it. But I just feel like I had it. There's the vaccine if you want it now. It's like there's no reason anybody should have to wear a mask. But, I mean, if you're sick or you have like a pre-existing condition, please, by all means. But I'm just excited because now I can go do stand-up. I can go back out into the world. I've been in my little cubbyhole writing screenplays and doing stuff. I'm still finishing 2 scripts before I go to Texas, which is on your little thing there. So I'm going to go to that. But you've been out in the world doing comedy still. Like you haven't stopped.
I have. Yes, it's funny. I've been surprised how fast I got inundated with gigs. And now it's going to slow down a little bit. I got lazy because all these gigs fell into my lap right as things were opening up. And I've been really busy with other projects and sick babies and all that stuff. So I haven't reached out to like any bookers. I do need to now start doing that process, but it was, past month and a half, I've basically been on the road every weekend, and I've had some really great shows. I've had some reminders of, live comedy can also be soul-crushing, depending on – I've had one of those five people in a 500-seat venue, one of those fun ones. But I've had some sold-out ones, got a standing ovation in Eureka, California, and they bought a ton of Lone Star Lance after that those two shows. So it's always stand up to me is unless you're like Kevin Hart, like it's the most high variance performance art, because, you know, most of the time, if you're an actor, you know, you're going to be playing in kind of similar, you're acting in similar venues, similar things. Stand up, it's like literally like I had 1 week where I felt like I was the second coming of Richard Pryor. And then the next week where I'm like, wow, how is this venue even going right now with how much money they must have lost on only having five people here? Yeah, but it's, and then yesterday I had the pinnacle of my comedy career. I headlined a show at an assisted living facility. Nice. And now I will tell you, I've done many active 55 plus communities in my career. I have a lot of, even though I'm 32, I have a lot of like Tom Jones references. I love me some boomers. But the assisted living ones are tougher because some of these folks, you know, a lot of them, like they have dementia. They're very depressed. They're not doing well. And so not a lot of energy. But they were super sweet. I actually, because I riff with the audience, there's one woman who, when she was in Israel as a youth, they taught her how to do judo, and she used it to beat up a guy in Israel who grabbed her breast. So then I had her get up, and I had her show me the judo move she did on the guy. It was impressive. She genuinely hurt my leg. And,
did you have to reenact the first part? You didn't reenact the first part, though, right?
No, she actually did kind of grab my hand. She's like, and he touched my breast. I'm like pulling my hand away. I'm like, I'm not going to, you know. But yeah, it was. And then, you know, some of them, it is kind of, you know, it's kind of sad because some of them do have dementia. And so, you know, I talk a lot about my wife and son. And then after the show, one of the ladies was very engaged. She was awesome. She comes up, talks to me afterwards, and she goes, so are you married? Do you have kids? And I'm like, oh, that's tough.
Yeah. And how much time did you have to do there?
I did an hour and 10 minutes.
And that was just your regular 15-minute routine that you just had to like keep repeating over and over?
Yeah, I just repeated it four times. Yeah. No, and it was, but it was funny because actually I did, so I was scheduled to do an hour, and it was an hour cold. Like there was no opener. It was just go on up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hey, that's prime time. That's prime time in the retirement community.
Yeah, right. Happy hour. But what was really sweet is I came to the end of the hour, and then they were like cheering me on to do more. So I did an extra 10 minutes. So listen, you find me another comedian who's going to do an hour and 10 minutes cold to an assisted 20 assisted living folks. Bring it, baby. Bring it. But it was funny. That's something for the comedian fans who listen to the show and those who are comedians, you know, a tough show where the audience isn't bringing a lot of energy, it can feel really long. Yeah. So there are some like, and this has happened because I had five shows at the San Jose Improv, and you do two in one night usually. So I was up super late performing. The next morning I had to perform at the San Francisco Breakfast Club in like the fanciest hotel. And it was, everyone was like 80 plus, and I'm exhausted. And it's one of those where you had to do an hour and you look at your watch, you're like 15 minutes in. You're like, oh my goodness, I feel like I've been up here 3 hours. So, and there was a giant clock behind me at the Alyssa's Living. So I looked behind me and I saw I was 25 minutes in. I'm like, oh, this is going long. But then like you just power through. And then like the last 5 minutes went by in a flash. Cause I always like to close strong. So I saved, you know, 5 minutes of fire for the end. But, you know, it took every fiber of my audience interaction, 13 years of audience interaction, took every fiber to do it. But they were really sweet. I love them.
Aren't you glad you didn't do Celine with that lady who does judo? You try to pull her up on stage, she just like flips you.
Right?
It's like, whoa!
Well, did I tell you the story about the guy who I tried to bring on stage with Celine? And his legs didn't work. Did I tell you about that?
No.
Oh man, there. So now since live comedy is bringing back, I haven't told this story much. But there was I headlined a one nighter at the Punchline in San Francisco, my home club. And there was a guy in the front row, and he's big and strong and beefy, and I was riffing with him the whole night, and like seemed like just an athletic guy. And so that usually if you've come to my shows, you know that I kind of feel out the front row, and then you can Google it or go on YouTube.
It's on there, I think.
And
yeah.
See, Celine Dion, David Studebaker. You'll see the bit where I bring a guy on stage and dance to Celine Dion. So I was like, okay, this is my guy. I'm going to him all night. So I start to do the thing and I surprise him. I go to pull him on stage and I pull him on and he just starts sitting on the floor. And I'm like, I thought he just didn't want to play along with the bit. So right. I'm like, now I'm like essentially giving him a lap dance, you know, trying to do the Celine dance with him. And he just won't get up. And I'm like, and at the end, he was a friend of the opener on the show. And I talked to the opener. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I should have told you. Like, he had some weird cancerous thing in his legs and he can't walk right now. And I'm like, oh, I would have been great to have that information before I pull, before I pulled this poor man on stage and inflicted it. So
did he have fun, though? Like, did he laugh and whatever?
Oh, yeah, he loved it. I mean, he was having a good time.
Okay, good.
But it was just one of those where, like, in my head, I'm like, what is happening right now? And I'm like getting mad at him. Like, come on, get up, you know?
Work with me here, buddy.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I would say 99% of the time they play along. Sometimes they get a little vigorous. I've had guys like really, you know, take advantage of some body parts, some Me Too moments on stage. But hey, anything for the comedy. But there's been like only two times where it really hasn't worked. That time, I mean, it still worked, but it was just weird. The other time, again, I was set up. This guy, Booker, he had a guy in the audience who was like the fire chief of the city that I was performing in. And he's like, oh, he loves being brought on stage and do it. Turns out he was lying to me. The Booker was pranking me. The guy hates being brought on stage. And so I went to try to grab him and pull him on stage. And I don't know if you've ever tried to pull a fireman somewhere. They tend to be fairly strong human beings.
Yeah.
And so it was like I was trying to move a boulder. And so and he was not moving. And so, again, it just turned into a lap dance at his table. I'm like, well, he's not moving. We're going to dance here. I'm going to make it work and hope I don't get punched.
Yeah.
So those are some war stories as we come back to the live shows.
I am very excited for live shows. I've done a lot of Zoom shows, I've done private stuff, I've done whatever, but I am just like so excited to go back to the club. I know it seems weird, but I just like, I miss it, man. Like it's been over a year. Let's see. Is that March that it shut down? Cause I think I did a show like the week prior to it shutting down. And then I haven't been on stage since then. So over a year, you know, probably March, April, May, June, July. So like, yeah, a year, 15 months. Yeah. It's a long time to not do
crazy
stuff on stage, but I've been working on material. So that's good. I'm hoping that that's what happened. I'm hoping that what this did was get a lot of comedians into a writing mode where they maybe weren't writing before, but now that they can't go on stage, they're like, okay, I need to write new material. So when things do open up, I can go back on stage with new material. I'm going to be very upset if I go to a open mic and I hear a bit that I've heard 2 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, I will be so mad. Yeah. I will yell at that comedian. I'm like, hey, you had all this time to write. What were you doing? What were you doing? You know, I'm going to be mad. Cause like, dude, come on, like step up this is the time. Like the world said, here you go. Here's a pause moment for you to step up your game. If you didn't do it, I'm going to be very mad. Like if I hear the same bit that I heard, I get like we're doing a show. You need to do your, you know, your big five that, you know, works all the time because you're working on new material. But if you go to an open mic and you work on material that you've already done, I'm going to be so livid. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm allergic to Los Angeles open mics.
Yeah.
I won't be there to do that. But
I will be there.
Yeah. No, it is. It's going to be interesting. It's also just going to be interesting from a booking perspective. Like, part of why I haven't reached out to bookers is I just like feel bad for them right now, because under normal circumstances, comedians are constantly hounding them for work. But when you have almost every comedian in the region not having worked for over a year, and then all of them hitting you up at once, I feel for them.
I was going to go to the auditions at Flappers yesterday, and I didn't go. I don't know what it was like, but I'm assuming it was just like the only time every comedian of Los Angeles has been in, has filled the entire Flapper showroom at one time. Like, yeah, I'm assuming that's exactly what it was. I don't know how it was. I should ask. I had no people there, but I was like, I should go. But then I was like, oh, day one, that's going to be, it's going to be a fight. Like, I'm just, you're like, yeah. All right, we're only going to be able to take 50 of you. It's going to be like 200 of your comedians. Like, come on, man. You know, like, all right.
So you got to get there 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, trying to get on Rise of the Resistance is trying to get the.
Did you ever try out for the Laugh Factory in LA?
No.
What you used to have to do is go wait in line. Yeah. I think it was like a Friday or a Thursday or something like that. You had to go wait in line.
Was it Wednesday?
Get a number and then come back the following week to get your open mic spot. So you had to wait basically like 2 weeks. I was like, oh man, I never did it. But I thought about it like several times. I was like, I just can't do that. I can't do that to myself.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, if you're a single guy, you don't have a lot going on, and kind of the LA clubs are like what you're really trying to get into.
Yeah.
It might be worth it. I mean, you know, I auditioned at other clubs and I jumped through the hoops, but that one was just like a bridge too far, especially because by the time I came down, I was like 7 years in and I'm like, the Laugh Factory is an amazing club. I'd love to perform there, but like, that's not going to make or break my career. And it probably is going to make or break my week, having to do that. And then, you know, now that I got a kid, like, I mean, come on, man, let's, and also there's ways to get booked to the Laugh Factory where you're not, you know, jumping through that hoop and you're performing for no one. I mean, a lot of times you're performing essentially to an empty room. And I just, that whole audition process of performing to an empty, like at least Flappers, as I recall, I'm a three-time pizza comic at Flappers. you can explain that to them later. But at least like there's usually a lot of comedians in the room, and a lot of them are enough of them are new, so they still kind of enjoy comedy, and they're not just like jaded and unhappy. Yeah. But from what I've heard, maybe it's changed. From what I heard, the Laugh Factory, it's a little more of like you and a few other people, and it's not real testing.
Well, I used to go when I first started doing stand up. I would sign up for the show at the Comedy Store, like where everyone has to go and sign up and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and then they post like 50 people or 20 people or whatever it is on the window, and that's it. And you just see like every like that whole line wraps around, every sign's back, and then they all get back in line. And they stand there and wait, and then the sign goes up, and they all kind of – and you just, it's the same movement. Everybody goes, looks, oh, and then they, like, move on.
Yeah.
The next comedian comes and looks, oh, and then moves on. And it's like,
you
know, one comedian out of 100 comes up and goes, hey, I got in this time, and then, like, walks away, and everyone's like, you know. Like,
I know.
That's why I think comedians get angriest.
No, I know. And it's – I mean, maybe it's just – maybe it's to my detriment, but, like – at this point, like I'm 13 years in, and I get booked enough that I just I don't need to do that. I was trying when I first moved to LA. I was doing the clubs and doing that whole thing and trying to jump through it. And at a certain point, I'm just like, these are all basically unpaid. Some of them are completely unpaid.
Yeah.
You're getting like 30, 40 bucks for an 8-minute set, and it's just like I just would rather like spend the evening with my family when I'm in town and just get my stage time on the road than deal with that. But maybe that's to my detriment.
Well, no. Cause you have a Dry Bar special coming out at some point in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months. So that's going to raise your stock, and then you're not going to have to. So I don't know this because I haven't done the road like you. I've been to like other clubs outside of it, but that's just booking. That's not the road. How do you work on new material then when you're on the road if you don't do open mics? Like, how does that work for you? Like, how do you?
Oh, it's easy.
Okay.
I mean, it's honestly so much more efficient and better, you know, to work out new material because. So let's give an example. So let's say I'm featuring at a club for six shows. So I'm doing like a weekend of shows. And for those listening at home, featuring, usually you're the middle act, so you do like 30 minutes. Okay. So if I have 30 minutes, I can fill an hour of material. So if I have a 30 minute set, I have, you know, I can fill that set with 25 minutes of material that I know it, you know, within a certain level of variance is going to entertain the audience. Yeah. So it's not like I'm not doing my job for people paid, but I can lace 5 or 10 minutes of that. Within that, I can lace that with new jokes. And so, and this is in front of a real audience who's paid money and aren't just cynical. Even a real audience within LA City, there's so many comedians. They've been forced to so many comedy shows. It's not, this is not an event for them. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just so much more efficient because you think about, okay, it's a 8 to 10 minute set. Even if you do multiple sets in a night, it's still, you never know if they're going to be good. So I can do 6 shows in one weekend. And if you total it, let's say I do 10 minutes of new material over the course of those 6 shows, that's an hour of new material. Now, some of it may be repeating each time, but it's so much more efficient. And then I record those and then I listen back and I refine. And so it's such a better, to me, a better way of if you can do it, a better way of refining material. So yeah.
I like that. No idea. And I assume you kind of weaved it in there somewhere, but it's like, how do you know where to put it in a set that you've already done? Like, you know, you're 25 minutes or whatever, but you have to find that spot for that new material to figure out where it works. In there.
Yeah. So the way I do it, cause I have like an ideal stack of where the jokes go ideally. And it flows a certain way over the course of 45 minutes or an hour or whatever. But I always tend to chunk everything. So essentially I have like 4 to 7 minute sections. Everything is kind of a 4 to 7 minute section that is fairly interchangeable. So all I do is just, I have these different sections, and if a new bit thematically fits with one of those sections, okay, I'll just put it in there. Or if it doesn't, I can just, you know, lace it in between 2 different sections that I know work. So that's kind of how I work it. Okay. There are comics who, where they're very story heavy. It's very much like it has to be the same flow of everything every time. And that can become more tricky. But even then, there's ways to do it where, I mean, honestly, just take a pause in the middle of that and then do 5 minutes of new stuff and then get back to your perfectly crafted 45.
I mean, we spent a lot of time crafting that material. Like, that's the thing. I'm excited to go back to the mic because I have material that I worked out with Robert G. Lee and his writing group and stuff like that. So I've worked on a stuff. I have a whole bit about a pet adoption or pet rescue, really, which is amazing. And like, it has killed so far. Every the time that I've done it, it has killed. So I'm hoping that bit, like, and it's like a good 3 to 4 minutes bit, like just about pet adoption. And so like it'll be good. I hope that it works out because I want to flow into other stuff.
Yeah, it's funny for me because, you know, you're more of a guy, you like to write, you know, consistently every day and really pump stuff out. For me, I've actually written, it's funny because you're hating on the comedians, I've written less stand-up during the pandemic than like almost any other time, because for me, I love writing, and I especially love like writing novels and scripts,
right?
But I don't find a lot of joy in stand-up writing. The joy for me is in performing. And for me, like, stuff doesn't come usually like where I sit down and I make it come. For me, stuff comes organically. And if I don't know that, like, okay, tomorrow night or tonight or in a few days, I'm definitely getting on stage, it tends to just dissipate. So what I had done during the pandemic is if a premise comes, I just make a little note and it's there. And now it's funny timing because over the past couple of weeks, I've been like combing through my email notes and being reminded, oh yeah, I had that premise. Oh yeah, that. And so I'm going to start writing again. But for me, I shifted it where I didn't have a lot of time to write stuff like Lone Star Lance, available on Amazon or after my shows. I didn't have time to write that sort of stuff. So I shifted totally to more writing that. But now that it's opening up again, things are starting to percolate. So
see, what I do is I put a little thing that says joke ideas, and I just write like idea, like good and kid
idea, good.
Yeah, good and stuff, kid injuries, explaining Blockbuster to my kids, Rudy was my hero, Halloween parade. Like, I have all these different things. Yeah. Redbox lurkers, because that keeps happening to me at Redbox. It makes me mad. fancy milk, kids bop versions of songs. Like I have like all these like ideas, and then I go through and log how many pages of jokes I have from like each year. So like in 2015 I wrote 11 pages, and 2016 14, and 2017 18, and 2018 19, and then 2019 34, and 2020 35 pages of jokes, and so far in 2020 40 pages of jokes, because that's what I did, was I just, for 2021 I just wrote, like I just wrote this whole time. Yeah. Between those
well
two
and months. I will say in my first few years of stand-up I was writing a ton more. I had stacks of notebooks and the whole thing. Yeah. And before I even started doing stand-up, I wrote for like just a year straight. So you also, you know, I've gotten a little lazy in my old age, James. Maybe when the dry bar drops, you know, I'll have to.
Well, you're going to have to get new material then. Stuff. Yeah, you will. You will.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I will. Yes. But there are guys who I've worked with who they're still touring off of stuff that they were doing 40 years ago. So it was. You know,
I don't want to be that guy. I have jokes that have worked when I started stand up that I don't use anymore, that I probably should, yeah, like could work into in half an hour, but I've actually decided like kind of the theme that I want for my special, like when I get there. So I thematically have changed a lot of stuff, but yeah. I think that's what it is. I love stand up. I love what it means. I love that it's coming back. I'm so excited. The same with you. Same thing that you did during the pandemic. I did. I was writing screenplays for people, commercials. You worked on commercials. Like we worked on a lot of projects and stuff. And I am just super grateful.
Yeah, I acted in some very interesting, fun commercials, both in my kitchen and Luke's kitchen.
I have seen those.
Yeah, there's. Did you see the ShamWow one? That was a fun one. I got to send you that one. They haven't released it yet. There was we filmed it where I had to dress up and act like the ShamWow guy, but I was selling. It was like a sad ShamWow guy, and he was trying. It was for like a video game company, but it hasn't been released yet. But it was funny. It was gross. Some of the stuff I had to do was, and I ate a long story. But yeah, we're making it work. Yeah, James is the hardest working man in screenwriting biz.
I just finished a script last week. I am gonna finish another about 100-page script this week, and then I have to turn in another 90 or so page script by the end of June before I go to Texas for a week. So, and then I also have another, when I come back, I have another script that I have written half of it, and the person like disappeared and didn't come back. So then they just came back like, hey, can I pay you now? And I was like, look, I'm not going to be able to do anything till I get back in July. He's like, yeah, that's fine. So I have that one. And then I have a TV show, a web series, and an animated series that I have to finish like over the next 2 months too.
How's the Uganda mall show going? Was it Uganda or which,
It was Ghana.
Ghana. Yeah. I knew there was
waiting. I've seen footage of part of it. So I'm just waiting for it to be released. I'm waiting for him to get back to me, because I know they're editing all the episodes. So hopefully they'll be released
you're the king of Ghana TV.
You're the
Dick Wolf of Ghana TV.
I'm the king of Fiverr screenwriting. I actually I'm now a Fiverr pro.
You are.
And I raised my rates, and I thought that it would definitely hurt me, and it has not hurt me. And it is weird what people are willing to. I'm not complaining. It's like, oh, good. Because I have stuff to show that I've done all these things. So it's not like it's not working, but it's just like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff. But then I've actually turned down more stuff than I've taken in the last like couple months. Cause I don't have time. And I picked up a new addiction. Are you aware of something called Magic the Gathering? Yes. Jeez. That is my addiction. Here's my set that I've been playing. I can't see it, but let's just put it this way. I've spent somebody's mortgage payment on Magic the Gathering over the last couple months. Let's just put it that way.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Are you doing drinking, this just right? for fun or to resell? Are you, because I know you weren't you reselling some Pokemons?
I have a binder that's worth about $2,000 in Magic cards right here. It's funny. I've actually spent less than the cards are actually worth. So I have cards that are worth a lot more money. So that's good. I could turn around and make a profit. So I did study and whatever, but I also do play the game. So it's not just me like
You're gonna
buying and reselling, like, hey, I'm gonna scalp you guys. Like, I'm not doing that either.
Do you have a Magic the Gathering chunk? Like, what's the deal with someone throwing a fireball at your dwarf?
I am working on some Magic the Gathering material because we're gonna bring back Nerds with Words at the game store.
Oh, yeah.
That's something I already talked to them about. So I will be doing some magic. D&D is actually getting the first crossover. Everyone's like, we're tuned out now. This is not comedy. Getting the first
battle axer. I hardly knew her. Hey.
D&D is actually getting its first set of magic cards coming in July. So finally the first Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering crossover.
You know, I tried playing Dungeons and Dragons one time. I was like, this is way too much math. And
it is a lot of math.
I was so lost. I'm like, I'm going to go watch a Giants game.
you would like Magic, though, because it's not really math. I mean, it is a little bit of math, but it's very much.
I never got into that. Even like the Pokemon when I was younger, like when the first craze first happened, like whatever, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I tried. I just didn't, this may surprise you, but you know, I'm just kind of your average, put on a ball game and, you know,
I feel
sparkling water. I was going to say beer, but I don't really drink. Crack open a sparkling water.
Crack open a liquid death.
Yeah. Right. There it is. I keep seeing liquid death everywhere now.
Yeah,
and they still wouldn't give you free stuff, which is
they have not. And I reach out to them to try to get me to like sponsor me. I still drink their stuff. I don't care if they never sponsor me. Someday you will see James Creviston. Liquid Death presents James Creviston. You know, it'll happen.
It's a travesty that it hasn't happened yet.
And that is true. So what is in the future for you? What do you see for the rest of 2021 for you? What is your goal here? What are you hoping to get out of this now? The comedy is back.
I mean, I'm hoping to hit every assisted living facility in America. Just really, yeah. No. So, I mean, it's funny because there's a company that does corporate virtual events that looks like because there's so many companies that are still staying remote even after this. So, and they need team building stuff. So this company, they have a bunch of team building exercises and I'm like the in-house comedian for that option. So I still have virtual shows. I'm still getting gigs for other virtual shows, for hosting things, for different stuff like that. I have some interesting opportunities TV producing wise that kind of fell into my lap. So that's pretty cool. I'm looking to bring David's Ark back at some point. Just trying to do as many live shows as possible and sell as much Lone Star Lance as possible.
We will put in the link in the show notes, I promise.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, because it's been great. That's one thing it's been so cool about doing live shows is selling Lone Star Lance after shows where I could. I love doing stand-up, but it's made it even more fun because not only am I doing the shows, but I'm selling something that really means a lot to me and I really believe in. And so it's like not even about the money, but just like it's like a double whammy of like not only do I get to do comedy, but I also get to share the book. Just gonna keep plugging away. And then for my Lone Star Lance fans out there, I am starting to compile ideas. So I already kind of had there's a general framework that always at the end of the line, if you read the whole book, you'll see there's a teaser for the next book. So there's been a general framework, but the specificity within it is starting to take shape a little bit.
Can we expect the second book? Like, what are we talking? 6 months, a year, what?
I'm thinking releasing it in about a year is kind of my goal. Because what I wanted to do is I released it back in October, but I wanted to have about a full year of doing live shows where I could sell this after each show. Because I typically about once a year, I'll go back to the same venue. So then I can have a new book when I go back. So that's kind of my goal. I also am somewhat at the mercy of my amazing graphic designer who did the cover beautifully, but it was a lot of work and he's a very busy man. So I told him I wouldn't write the next one too fast so that I could still have his services. So I'm looking forward to giving James Creviston a big hug and doing some shows with my guy again. And
I'm excited.
We gotta get out there.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I'll link the book in the show notes. I'll link it to davidsudebaker.com and all that stuff. Thank you so much for coming on, David. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Pleasure. Get excited. Comedy's back. The world is back. We're there. We're doing it.
Yeah, baby.
You're not there.
Yeah, baby.
You have no excuse. You go to CVS, you get a vaccine right now. CVS. No, I mean,
That's right.
If you have something that you can't get the vaccine, I 100% get it. But come on, man. Let's get back out there. Let's go to the world. I'm going to Texas for a week in July. I'm going to fly to Texas. The place has been the Wild West of all this stuff. Where they're like, they weren't even care. They didn't even know that it was going on. They're still shooting off six shooters out there. Like, everything's normal. You know, like, they have no clue. So, like, I'm going there. It's going to be awesome. And I'm very excited. So, welcome back, comedy. Welcome back to the real world. Everybody get out there. Let's get excited. Let's, you know, if you haven't been writing, let's do it. Come on. Let's do this. I'm so excited. I'm the most excited person about this in the world. Like, I cannot wait. I've been stuck in this office writing and producing and creating and whatever and not be able to go out to the world and share it with anybody. So I'm so excited.
James, and just to make James mad, the next time he and I have a gig together, I'm doing all old material. I'm going to do all the stalest, oldest stuff that I have.
Going to do old Catskills jokes. Take my wife, right? Please.
Yeah, I'm gonna do jokes that I did like 12 years ago that I haven't done in years, just to be as stale as possible.
But see, the thing is, I won't know that. So then it's like,
okay. That's true. They'll seem new. Yeah, that's right. I actually, full disclosure, during the pandemic, I was like, man, there is some like stuff I haven't done in like 8 years that's kind of new now. Let's bring it back.
That's the time. Nobody's seen it in a year, so you're good to go.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you guys so much.
Please like, subscribe, follow, check us out, and have a great one. Let's get excited. Have a good one. Bye.